All right, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join us this week on Thursday, 6 p.m. to get in on the action. Spotify Green Room. All right, got a packed podcast today, buddy. Hit us with the beats.
You know it, man. We talk a little bit about the NBA Finals over the weekend, Game 5 to the Bucks, and then John Hollinger has a bit of a new evaluation system for where the money should get spent this offseason. We tap in as it covers a couple of specific Brooklyn Nets.
Before that, though, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, lead basketball analyst and owner of DFSR.com. If you need some projections, really for any sport, for FanDuel, DraftKings, go check out DFSR.com. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster and also the host of the One Giant podcast, where he's covering the New York Football Giants with his boy, Andy Mack. Buddy, how are we doing on a Monday morning?
Oh, howdy, friends. We're doing great. Can I be honest, though? I just noticed that. I think I noticed it before, but you sometimes even sound surprised that you are the owner and operator of DFSR. Is it still a shock to you how entrenched you are in the world of analytics around sports?
I got to be honest with you. I just kind of hate saying it. We've been kind of given a directive introduce yourself on the podcast and sort of and go that way. And I think it makes sense, especially for first time listeners, to kind of if you're able to give one sentence worth of background on you that summarizes all the reasons that you're an expert. I don't like saying it. So there you go. That's a little.
I think we should switch it up. Hey, like I'm Adam, and there's Adam Armbrecht, Sagittarius, long walks on beaches. You know, we could always take it another way.
I'd be like father of two, bald as the day is long.
And those are the reasons like that we're experts on the Brooklyn Nets.
His head looks like a basketball, you know, something like that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we got a lot to talk about today, a lot to talk about this week, a lot to talk about actually over the next couple weeks. Still in free agency mode here. We're still in NBA Finals mode, draft coming up. Even the Nets draft lower, but the Nets still draft. So there's a bunch of stuff that we want to get into. Obviously, got to talk about the finals here. I mean, we're 2 days after the Saturday game between Bucks and Suns, a series that is not over, but this game, we were waiting for a sort of the tide to flip or a really close game or something like that, like, you know, maybe a classic. I'm not sure we're going to put it in the classic mode yet, but this game was just such a good one. It was just everything you kind of want from a basketball game. If you're complaining, you know, we did a bunch of talking about where the legitimacy of the finals is. This was going into the finals, and it was really more about the injuries more than anything else. And I don't think either of these two teams qualify for that because they're just not injured. Dante DiVincenzo doesn't qualify as an injury you put down, or Dario Saric as injuries you put down for having swung finals. So these teams coming in basically 100% healthy and then playing like this. But man, the Saturday game was good. comeback, Drew Holiday finally getting a game under his belt that where he just didn't absolutely stink it up on the offensive end, had some key plays, the lob to Giannis. This was kind of everything you wanted in a basketball game.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned just, I mean, Holiday, he hit the jumper, was the first bucket of the game, just got into the mid-range, and you just thought from an objective fan standpoint of, okay, good, because we mentioned at the game prior of not, when you see somebody as good as Holiday is defensively and was a part of the sequence there on the defensive end that led to that late lob with Giannis, but when you see clunkiness on the offensive end, it just makes it harder to kind of, I think, get into the rhythm of the game. But this had, listen, it had a big, big lead for Phoenix, got that chopped down by Milwaukee. You could not tell. There's a lot on Twitter was like, what just happened in some of those final sequences there? Because I don't know if you had any sense of who was actually going to win that on a possession to possession basis. It very much felt like, well, Phoenix got it locked up. Now, hold on a second now. Looks like Milwaukee's going to take control of this thing. Like, both teams wanted it and also fumbled a little bit. And for as funny as the game to game has been for some individual performances, the key players, Booker in that final sequence coming down when he loses it in the lane to Giannis and then leads to that lob, the biggest players have been involved in the decisive moments of the series as well, which to your point about the legitimacy of it, that's what you want. You know, biggest players with the biggest opportunities. And I know we talk about the, you know, not needing to really go into legacy piece too much, but Giannis is at least, he's writing a heck of a chapter for himself.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was just had all these little moments in it. It wasn't the cleanest game of all time, but it still had a lot of scoring. You mentioned the comeback. To come back from 16 in the first quarter is no joke. Although I do think in the current NBA, that's a lot easier to do. Or it's not saying you can do it all the time, but it's just easier to kind of erase these leads with if you can just hit some threes, basically, to get yourself back into the game. I think that kind of answered some questions around Chris Paul, whether he was healthy or not in this game. He looked a lot healthier here. They still were not able to win, but he was kind of a total mess in game four, and that didn't seem to be the case in this one. I actually watched this game with a guy who's a huge Chris Paul fan, like really wants Chris Paul to win. And it was interesting watching the game because I'm kind of like just neutral. I'm a neutral party here. I can make,
right.
I'm going to be happy kind of no matter what happens, as long as the series ends up being a good one and like no one gets hurt and stuff. I think I'm going to be able to be happy for it. But watching with someone that clearly wanted the Suns and Chris Paul, it was mostly, he's not a Suns fan, but he's a Chris Paul fan and kind of just wants to erase that talking point around Paul. It was interesting watching that part of the game with him, and I kind of, you know, you get just a sense of like what it means to like have fandom and stuff, and especially in the current NBA where fandom sometimes revolves more around players than it does around teams. So we've seen that with the Nets, obviously, as well, with lots of people coming into the fan base with guys like Kevin Durant and guys like James Harden, where you root for players and then you know, like we said before, by proxy root for the team. Watching it with a guy who wanted Chris Paul to win, I was like, oh man, there's a lot of people out there right now, and there's some people that don't want to because they want their biases around Chris Paul's inability to win big games or, you know, whatever to become true. There's the opposite group. Those are usually talking head people, but more than anything else. But it was interesting watching it from that standpoint. But in the end, yeah, it's hard to see the Suns after I hate to like do the, you know, most recent kind of what have you done for me lately kind of approach, but because it almost never works out. But man, taking that game in Phoenix, especially in front of that crowd with the way they played, where all three of those guys just stepped up and played really well, the Suns definitely have an uphill battle now.
Yeah, you know, you talked about, well, I was hearing about the narratives around Chris Paul, I said the injury, and whether or not, how do you try to manage him through these last three games if he was hurt? And the sense was, well, it really doesn't matter. You need to win two out of the last three games, obviously, you know, whatever two it is. And because you do have the game seven in Phoenix, you can certainly say as long as we can get back there. But I think the way in which game five goes certainly indicates or makes you feel like, okay, yeah, we said if you can just get back to Phoenix, but that seems like a much harder task now. And it at the end of that game, the look, and I know this is like one of the silly things to get into, but just the general look on Drew Holiday's face and Middleton and Giannis, like that team, those guys on the court came together at the end of winning game five and had a real sense of, we knew we needed to have this, and by needing it and getting it, we now also know that we have a real stranglehold on going back to Milwaukee and locking this thing up and putting every single ounce of pressure on the Suns from the first tip. And they know they have the size advantage, and Giannis has been dominant the entire series. Like, it just felt like there was a bit of this swell behind that victory, unlike any of the other ones, being up 2-0 if you're Phoenix, and even being down if you're Milwaukee, just coming back and now winning three in a row. It does feel like the momentum is clearly swung in the other direction. And, you know, like you said, the game will tip off in game six and Phoenix will come out and win and we'll go to a game seven and that'll be totally moot. But it feels like Milwaukee is about to complete a four-game run in this series and take it in six.
If you want a reason to root for the Bucks here, our boy Kane Pittman, who hosts Locked On Bucks.
Yeah.
He's an Australian. He's been on the show. We've had a couple episodes with him. Great dude. Awesome. Just analyst of basketball. Huge Bucks guy, obviously. And he lives in Australia, and he covers, he does national media for Australian stuff too. And so, like, you know, as Locked On Nets also. But he wrote a tweet the other day that It says, I just discovered that my role covering the Olympics would have me working all day for Game 7 of the Finals. I believe that would be my first game missed in many years. As a selfish reporter, I'm going to need the Bucks to wrap this up in six. Thank you. And that was before Game 5. So I had that. I kind of actually had Kane on my mind when I was maybe a little mini rooting for the Bucks there because, I don't know the guy. Don't know a ton of Bucks fans. Know that one. He wasn't going to be able to watch for a very specific reason. I thought that was kind of good. Reason enough to root for the Bucks. All right, going to get into some Bruce Brown and Dinwiddie free agency stuff based on some numbers thrown out by one of the more respected analysts in basketball. Going to talk about that in a second. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. If you want to see a number that flipped pretty severely on Bet Online, Suns were -150 to win the series before Game 5. Right now, Bucks series price -385. Massive favorites to take this down over the next two games on Bet Online. They got you covered for all your betting needs. MLB, NBA, UFC, those fights are rolling every single weekend, it seems like. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's your chance to get in the game as teams run through these championships, run through the regular season in MLB. Head on over to the website, sign up today. That's free, but when you make that deposit, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON. Promo code LOCKEDON, 50% welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Yes, sir. When we talk about wrapping up, tying a bow on some of the offseason things, Spencer Dinwiddie, he's just the story that keeps on giving or that won't go away, however you want to phrase it. We had just talked about Bruce Brown and how we felt about him. But then inside of this offseason where we felt like, and I think the overall storyline has told us that Spencer Dinwiddie is going to garner a significant contract on the open market or via sign and trade. We covered that. It seems like the number is closer to $20 million a year than not. Bruce Brown, you and I just discussed how we thought it was possible for him to maybe be kind of a unique player. He doesn't do the three-point shooting, obviously. Great defensive piece, very versatile, as we saw with the Nets this past year. But maybe there's not really the market value for him, and the Nets can end up bringing him back on a somewhat team-friendly deal while still getting Bruce Brown a nice payday. And then your boy, I'll call him your boy. I feel like you guys are close. John Hollinger kind of comes out. He gives his take on this that there sounds like there's validity to it. I mean, when I read it, it caught me off guard relative to where my mind was, but it does kind of throw an interesting wrench into the general perception of these two players, specifically when it comes to the Nets and retaining them.
Okay, right. So Hollinger did a free agent, and just a quick background here, John Hollinger created the stat PER, a longtime analyst for ESPN, moved into the Memphis Grizzlies box office,
he was making Grizzly movies for a while.
front office, thinking about movies here.
Did Bear Grylls, Man vs. Wild.
Sorry, Memphis Grizzlies front office, there we go, for a long time. I believe he worked all the way up to the assistant GM. He focused more on the scouting contract side than anything else, and now is back working with The Athletic, host the Hollinger and Duncan podcast on the Locked On Network. It's what, if you're looking for just to get smarter about basketball, that's one of the best podcasts out there. So he, as part of his work for The Athletic, has, and just as an analytics guy, just a stat guy, has created another stat after PER, which he calls BORD, B-O-R-D, with a dollar sign at the end. Full ratings dollars. So he's going for a name validity there rather than, or just looking for something catchy, I think, rather than something, which PER is player efficiency rating. So anyway, he goes through the top free agents in this offseason by their board number. Now, he gives a little insight. I'm burying it a little here, but I want to give everyone just a little background on where this number is coming from. So this number originally was a number that was used, that he used PR for some of it, and he used Raptor rating, and then he used Jacob Goldstein's number, and I can't remember actually what number this is exactly, what it's called. PIPM. And those were the three factors when he originally described the stat. Now, I actually don't know what he's using now. He still uses PR, but he's already admitted that he took out Goldstein's PIPM because Goldstein went on and moved into a front office. And then he just said he took Raptor completely off the board. So okay. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what is going into this. I know it values defense. I'm sure PR plays a pretty big part of it. And I'm saying values defense maybe in a way that... So he's trying to boil this down to statistics making a meaningful number rather than just what everyone sort of like universally agrees as a number from by just like looking at other comps, right? If that makes sense. So anyway, this all is, goes to lead us to some of the names at the top of this list are pretty obvious. It's like Kawhi, then it's Chris Paul. Some of these are player options, John Collins, Kyle Lowry, Conley. We skip down a little bit. A lot of the names aren't going to really surprise you. Maybe you want to think that Lonzo Ball should be a little lower. Danny Green should be a little lower. Okay, we can make cases for that. Hollinger's kind of going more defensive piece than that. So we get down to, and the first kind of like real surprise name, by the way, Jared Allen, number 11. The first really surprise name we get to, and he's right after Andre Drummond, which I found was interesting, was Bruce Brown. And I get in his, the board board's number for Bruce Brown. This is for single season, and Hollinger admits that he's not kind of projecting out in terms of length of contracts for this, just kind of going season per season. He valued Bruce Brown at a 14.8, so we'll just round it up to $15 million initial year contract, which is like way higher than I think we've seen anywhere else, as like just as a guess. And people are admittedly feel like they're probably just guessing with Bruce Brown. Right, like I don't, his market's weird. And then you skip down, and he gets the Dinwiddie at $13 million. Now, when you first read that, what were your opinions? Because I think, well, you can already hear that I was surprised, but you know, when you see that this is like, now you know, a real guy, Hollinger's a real guy. This isn't just someone just throwing out numbers on a hot take thing. This is, there's thought and numbers that have gone into this. What do you think when you see that Bruce Brown is, one, this high on the free agents list? Do you think that other teams kind of see it this way? And I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts here when you see that he's ranked here clearly high, way higher than almost probably anybody else is going to have him on a free agent list?
Yeah, it's surprising to me, to say the least. But the only way that I can wrap my head around Hollinger's approach to this is by saying that the defensive value, and we mentioned this when we talked about Bruce Brown, that there's a team, a contending team, would look at Bruce Brown and say, well, here's a missing piece for us that can do this very specific thing that fits into what we need and elevates that end of the floor for us in a way that we weren't going to get from anywhere else or from someone currently on the roster. If you look at it like that and say, well, then, overvaluing or maybe accurately valuing by Hollinger standards the defensive acumen of a Bruce Brown, maybe it's worth it. Maybe he does have a $15 million a year value. The problem is to me in these numbers is that this isn't the way the league values players. Like, this isn't the way that these players are looked at. You mentioned like Danny Green. Okay, he may be a really good player, but we've seen year after year, championship after championship, players like these, especially a Danny Green who's older, these are guys that come in for relatively low contracts a lot of time. And Danny Green is still making good money. But, you know, these are guys that come in on somewhat team-friendly deals because they're considered to be a specialist in a lot of ways. Now, I don't think that Bruce Brown is, you know, he's 24 years old. He's not in that mold. But I just don't see the league adhering to this type of evaluation the way Hollinger's laying it out. So I don't know if it's that Hollinger is saying this is what his contract will be or this is where his value should be. Because then when we get into the Dinwiddie piece, I think it's the same things apply. Injury, what his value is, what his offensive game, his defensive game specifically when it comes to him. And that's how you start to adjust these numbers. But there's a difference between what should be and what will be, right?
Yeah, well, he admits, and I'll read a little bit more of what he says about Bruce Brown because he kind of parrots that. He says, or you're parroting him, I guess. He says, history tells us that teams pay for offense, but not players like Bruce Brown. So I'm guessing he gets quite a bit less than that. So he's saying, he's admitting that this number is not likely going to be where the market value is, right? It's just where his numbers come out about what the actual value is. Now, if you trust his numbers for what they are, then you would say anything less than this, you're getting a massive bargain on a guy like Bruce Brown. Right. So I think we can probably agree that no matter what he gets, because it's not going to be $15 million a year, I think, anything less than a team could say to themselves, well, look, I mean, according to at least this number, we are getting a massive value. So anyone that gets him is going to probably feel that way. He also goes on to say, and this is important for everything that the Nets do, because we talked about the tax implications and now how at this point, not every dollar is one-to-one in terms of the luxury tax, right? Because every dollar that a player is signed for is multiplied many times out because it costs them the tax. And so this has to be factored in too. Now, we've said that, you know, Joseph's side, they don't seem crazy concerned with that, but it's not nothing. So the $10 million salary for Brown, this would be something if he like signed something under the mid-level exception or something like that, if it was matching an offer sheet, would cost the Nets $50 million with the tax. So just like having people wrap their head around this number, right? Like this is not, we are no longer in the straight one-to-one category of dollars. It's with the tax, things escalate really, really fast. And this can be where you have to just, Nets fans just have to ground themselves in, you know, $10 million, not $10 million. $10 million is $50 million because of the way the tax works. I'm going to get your opinion here on the Dinwiddie piece in a second. First, going to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar, very best protein bar on the market. The science is solved here, folks. Covered in chocolate and all the best flavors. You'll never actually believe that this is a healthy snack / energy boost for you when you get coconut, raspberry, double chocolate, cookies and cream, German chocolate. That's just some of the classic flavors you have over at Built Bar. Not ice cream flavors, folks. This is an actual protein bar that you can take with you and know that you're getting something healthy. 17 to 18 grams of protein. The calories range from 130 to 180. Only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, which you won't even believe after you just heard the list of flavors that I just read down. 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, amazing flavors, all tasty, all super healthy. If you order today, you can grab a special limited edition grasshopper cookie or raspberry, whatever you like. Built Bar is the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. So they're taking it with them to the Olympics. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at built.com.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And when you say, you know, 10 million costs 50, and that it's relative to the idea. It's not signing just Bruce Brown. It's just saying spending more than X is going to then inherit the additional cost. But I know I think just so everybody understands that as well. So then the question becomes from the Nets perspective is, are you spending the extra money or not? That's question one. If you're already spending the extra money, then you can look at Bruce Brown, you can look at Spencer Dinwiddie, you can look at anybody that you have on the roster and say, we want him back, we like him, the number doesn't matter. If not, then you're saying, well, automatically a guy that may cost us $10 million, we just have to say no. It's just a flat no. And then we're going to get in, and then we're going to get into the free agency. We're going to look for some MLEs. We're going to look for some veteran buyouts, whatever the case may be. And we're going to fill this roster out. And there's other guys, you know, we're getting to over the course of this week, probably Blake Griffin, Jeff Green, and what their circumstances are going to be and how that'll impact things. Generally speaking, it feels like no matter what it feels like inevitably that the Nets are going to get into more luxury tax. Like, I don't know if it's entirely avoidable, or it feels like if not Bruce Brown, someone else may become available that the Nets would look at and say, that's a really valuable piece. Are we willing to go extra? Yes, we're willing to go extra. And that just may be, you know, me looking at them signing, having the big three on this roster and taking that as an indicator, which is, as we said before, wrong to spend Joe Tsai's money. But I think that he'd be willing to. The other thing, quickly, when it comes to the Hollinger evaluation, you remember we had said last week when we talked about Bruce Brown that there was an executive that said, this is a guy that probably played to a $10 million value this past season. And so that almost, I think, speaks to what Hollinger's evaluation is on him. When you say this guy outperformed what his contract was this past year, he did a lot of things you didn't expect. Now, is it something you can repeat? Maybe, maybe not. But you got insane value on what it was. And also, I don't think that, you know, and the league's not going to reward him for that. So there's still this sliding scale. The other one is Spencer Dinwiddie, though. This is the one to me that is, this is very interesting because it's not only taking into account the rating system that Hollinger is putting in place, which is valuing the defensive end. But then he also mentions the ACL, right? The injury and then the impact on his market value.
Yeah, and he admits here that there's probably some problems with this valuation because this is out of context from the rest of the guys that are on this list who, you know, played last year. Right. So and when you don't play, the numbers can get a little screwed up because you know, in some ways it's funny because I wonder with some of this Bruce Brown stuff, like I'm sure you get helped with these. You can't. Basketball is a team game. There's almost no way to isolate players down to like the individual essence of themselves on the court because so much else needs to happen that you are ultimately affected by who you're on the court with. Now, this is why using on-off numbers helps because you can see what the team does when you're not on the court and how they improve. So you're able to isolate it decently, but not perfectly. Now, Dinwiddie is interesting because, you know, things will look better when you play with better players also, right? Like your numbers they can't help but improve really because when you have chances to do things, it's all much more in advantageous situations than you are if you're, you know, if you're Bruce Brown on the Pistons, it's going to be a lot easier to look better when you're on the Nets, just no matter what, like no matter what you're doing, it's going to look better when you're on the Nets pretty much because, especially when you're a guy like him, just because, you know, you're surrounded by players that make your life easier. Now, Dinwiddie was not afforded that chance this year. And we only have a sample size of what it looks like when he's asked to do maybe more than he should be doing on a game-to-game basis, right? So Hollinger doesn't really mention any of that. I'm kind of just saying what I believe to probably be the case with this stuff just because by nature of what happened with Dinwiddie. But he mentions that, you know, the ACL tear makes it a little hard here. There are other point guards on the market that, like Mike Conley and Kyle Lowry, that if you're a certain kind of team would go after those guys first, right? So the market gets a little weird with him because it's like, what kind of team would want him? You know, we've heard it from our guys over at Locked On Mavs that, you know, maybe that's a landing spot for him aside, next to Luka. There are other teams that want Dinwiddie's services for sure. I just thought it was interesting that he's much lower on this list than I thought he would have been, right? Like, again, he's below guys on the list like Norman Powell, like Evan Fournier. Kelly Olynyk is higher on this list than he is, right? So Andre Drummond, I know these guys aren't comps. I know these guys aren't comps. I'm just like saying that their names, I'm not sure those names I would have put ahead of him if I was just looking at the list without doing any other evaluation.
No, and that's where I think that this system of evaluation, it just, I don't want to say like it's lacking the eye test factor, or it's lacking, you know, not the common sense piece to it, but some of those names you mentioned, Kelly Olynyk. I'm sorry, you're not gonna, you know, there's not gonna be a lot of teams that look at it and go, yeah, I'd pay more for and would rather have Kelly Olynyk in today's NBA over Spencer Dinwiddie. Obviously, some teams are already gonna have certain positions locked up and they have a need. I get that, but that's the part of it where it just feels like there's a little bit of a disconnect because I just, you know, on paper, for what it is, I see Spencer Dinwiddie, I go, man, most teams would really benefit from having this player on there. And then when you mention someone, I'm not picking on him, but like a Kelly Olynyk, you go, and there's a name that I feel like I could find a dozen other names that could be just as good, better, more serviceable, and probably cost you next to nothing. Because again, he's a functional piece of a team that you need, but that is not a hard commodity to come across, where Spencer Dinwiddie, he's not a perfect player, but he also is a starting caliber point guard in the NBA, and that is something that's hard to find and hard to find reliability in.
I will say the eye test thing, I'm with you. I would not have put those just by if I was just rolling down the list, those guys would not have gone. I mean, maybe some of them, I was like really kind of getting into the nittier, grittier pieces. It's easy to forget, you know. So Hollinger, if you read the article's a great article. He's not saying that this is, he's very clear, he's not saying this is what they're going to get, or this is like what, like if you paid less or more than this, you got fleeced or you got a huge deal. I think he's just saying like, look, we need ways to evaluate these things on a player-to-player basis other than just, you know, hearing what agents want you to hear or hearing what front office guys are putting out into the media. So I think that like trying to wrap actual dollar numbers down to the cent around what a value a guy is a meaningful endeavor. And when you do that, it's going to give you some things that are going to be outside the realm of like what people just talk about, or a very carefully controlled free agency narrative, right? Around like, oh, this is what this guy should get, and this is the comp. So I think it's, like I said, it's a meaningful endeavor. And when you do these kinds of things where you just use the numbers to give you an answer, you are going to get stuff that just looks way different than what other people say, right? Like, that's just the name. And now, well, it's good when guys like Kawhi and Chris Paul are at the top of the list, because this guy, it makes, you know, sense. Right. Like, it would be weird if those guys were lower. But it's when you get into these like sort of more unknowns, and this was my original point was going to say, was around guys that are a little bit more, that you notice more because they have the ball more, right? This is another problem with basketball. The guys, it's easier to know that what exactly Spencer Dinwiddie is giving you, because when he's on the court, or at least his last iteration, he just had the ball a lot. And basketball fans like to look at what's happening with the ball, right? And when the guy that has the ball a lot and does things that are exciting, you sometimes can tend to rate them higher than guys like Danny Green, who do not have the ball a lot. But there are lots of other things happening on the court that are very, very important that do not always involve the ball. Does that make sense? So, like, sometimes,
yeah.
So it basically, the easier way to sum it up would be like, we value scoring more than anything else, right? And when you don't score at the same rate as some of these other guys, it's gonna look worse. Does that make sense? And maybe where, doesn't clear up confusion, but can tell you why these kind of numbers will look sometimes much different than what your eye tells you.
Yeah, we all agree that basketball is a team sport, and when you watch how good Giannis looks in the finals, you go, oh, Giannis is, you know, that's it. He's all that matters. But then you think about, what is Jrue Holiday doing off ball on a possession-to-possession basis to throw off Chris Paul and his rhythm and all those things, right? He doesn't have the ball in his hands, but he also has a big impact on the game. And, you know, in the regard to Hollinger's numbers when it comes to Spencer Dinwiddie, I will say, if he puts him around 13 million and Spencer Dinwiddie says he wants 25 a year, the interesting thing is the truth probably does fall somewhere in the middle of that. You know, 19, 20 million. That I wouldn't be shocked if that ends up being around the number that he ends up getting, which would be taking into account kind of the Hollinger perspective and evaluation, and then also the impact that an on-ball player can have.
100%. And this is the stuff that front offices are trying to constantly evaluate. They don't just like, you don't hear from the agent the first time and then say, sounds good. You know, like, you need to go back and present, like, you need to have cases that present your case, you know, present why you're going to stick to a number. It's just like, you got it. So it's just always good to take other looks at this stuff and see, especially again, like guys like Hollinger who are just super sharp guys who, you parlayed their statistical analysis, again, into working for a front office. Like, this isn't just some guy that made something up, right? Like, this is a guy who not only, you know, has a really, really firm grasp on this kind of stuff, and had such a firm grasp on it that another team wanted to hire him to, you know, maintain his grasp. So this is, I think it's worth, when guys like this throw stuff, numbers like these out, I think it is worth at least paying attention to and discussing, you know, why, what some of the reasons are and whether there's validity to it. All right, we got tons to talk about this week. We're going to get into Blake Griffin and what we think his offseason looks like. We got to do some draft stuff because that's coming down the pike. I want to talk about the Kevin Durant spaces that he got on over the weekend. Probably could have done a whole episode about that. Some of the stuff that he said, man of the people, that one. He wants to get out there and have his opinions known, and kind of doesn't care what you think, and is happy to tell you. And I always appreciate the honesty. So talk about that. Tons of stuff to talk about. In the meantime, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust. Help those numbers keep climbing. Rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts.
And of course, this week, it's the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey. It's featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford, and Odyssey NBA experts Brian Scalabrine and former general manager Ryan McDonough. Our Locked On NBA local experts will be making selections and trades for all your favorite basketball teams, the Brooklyn Nets, throughout this week-long special event. You can search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Odyssey is your home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY. And Doug asked the question, how do you get to the essence of a player? Well, I tell you what one man uses, a special cologne. It's called Sex Panther by Odeon. It's illegal in 9 countries and made with little bits of real panther, so you know it's good. Brian Fantana.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.